Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're joined by our duty expert on Asia on the eve of a very important visit by the leading powers president from that region. It is, of course, the visit of President Xi Jinping of China that we're going to talk about with our guest, Gordon Chang. Gordon, of course, is not only our duty expert on these matters, but also that of Forbes.com, WorldAffairsJournal.com, The Daily Beast, where he contributes regularly, Fox News and elsewhere. The author of two best-selling and very important books, The Coming Collapse of China and Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. Gordon, good to have you with us. A big week for you, needless to say. Happy to have a chance to talk with you a little bit about it in anticipation of a visit late in the week by President Xi at Mar-a-Lago with President Trump in Florida. Tell us what you expect.
I expect Trump to talk about North Korea. I expect him to talk about trade. I'm sure he will talk about China's peripheral seas, South China Sea and East China Sea, cyber attacks against American corporates. There are so many things to talk about because these issues have been deferred in previous administrations, and they're landing on the lap of Donald Trump.
You've written about the necessity of letting Trump be Trump in the course of this conversation with Xi Jinping. Give us a flavor of what you mean by that, Gordon, and whether you think it's in fact likely to eventuate.
Yeah, I think Trump's instincts are generally right when it comes to China. So, for instance, he took the December 2 congratulatory phone call from Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen. Unfortunately, others in his administration urged him to acknowledge the One China policy, which he didn't really want to do. And so I think that he generally looks at China with the correct perspective. Now, it's a very complex subject, of course, but I think his instincts are far superior to the studied foreign policy consensus that has ruled Washington for quite too long.
It's kind of common sense in application, and the question is whether he'll be able to do that, surrounded as he is by people who are either of the, some have called them panda-hugging mindset, or simply, you know, sort of status quo-oriented folks. Gordon, one of the things that we have talked about from time to time that is not generally brought up, but that seems to me ought to be in the course of conversations that are presumably going to be fairly wide-ranging between these two presidents, is what China is doing to expand its power projection capabilities well beyond its literal waters, for example, and its home territory, notably in Africa. Would you just say a word about that and whether it's important for this phenomenon to be addressed as well?
Well, China has always had relations with states in Africa. From the very beginning of the People's Republic, Mao Zedong viewed Africa as a place for support for China's positions. But nonetheless, what we have seen recently is the development of power projection capabilities, and some of those are related to Africa. So, for instance, what is being called as China's first offshore military base is in Djibouti, in the Horn of Africa. You know, we are seeing also the Chinese in Walvis Bay in Namibia on the other side of the continent. You know, clearly Beijing is going to militarize Africa just as it's militarizing other parts of the world. And this lets us know of its long-term ambitions, which are basically to take by force a number of different areas, as well as control seas, which would be prejudicial to freedom of navigation. So we have to be concerned about China's ambitions.
Freedom of navigation, of course, Gordon Chang, and our vital interests, trade and otherwise, security notably. A very ominous, I think, trend, and one that should be remarked upon and better yet addressed as a matter of national policy by the president. Let me ask you about a very interesting piece that you did in the Sunday Guardian recently, Gordon, and that was involving the sort of tradition that the Chinese seem to be acting on in their relationship with North Korea, You've called it their second evil child, exploiting kind of the idea of killing with a borrowed knife. Describe those terms for us and what it means in practice vis-a-vis North Korea.
China has used proxies to destabilize countries that it considered to be as adversaries. The first one was Pakistan to keep India off balance. And beginning somewhere in the first part of the 1970s, Beijing proliferated nuclear weapons technology to Islamabad. They're doing the same thing with regard to North Korea. China has been supplying the North Koreans with fissile material or semi-fissile material with components for their uranium weapons program, and as well as perhaps plans for a solid fuel missile. Basically, the Chinese have also helped the ballistic missile program in other ways. So clearly what they're using North Korea is a way to keep the U.S., Japan, South Korea off balance, just like they use Pakistan. That's why North Korea is China's second evil child.
Our guest is Gordon Chang. Gordon, of course, is not only our duty expert on these matters, but also that of Forbes.com, WorldAffairsJournal.com, The Daily Beast, where he contributes regularly, Fox News and elsewhere. The author of two best-selling and very important books, The Coming Collapse of China and Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. And this idea, this practice of killing with a borrowed knife, I guess, is referring to this practice of using proxies to do your dirty work. Is that right?
Absolutely. For instance, North Korea is destabilizing South Korea, of course. China couldn't do that directly, but because it supports the North Korean regime to the hilt, it can actually get the benefits of keeping the South Koreans off balance, destabilizing South Korean society, thereby bringing the United States in, distracting us from other issues of importance. And so this is a short-term win for China, and they're doing it through North Korea. And we got to understand that this tight relationship between Beijing and Pyongyang, yes, there are strained ties between the civilian diplomats, but where it really counts, at the military-to-military level and at the top level of both of those regimes, the ties are really as strong as they have been in a very long time.
Mm. And Gordon, this gives rise to context, important context, for the conversation that President Trump apparently intends to have with Xi Jinping about the possible use unilaterally by the United States, presumably of force. He says unilateral action. I'm not sure quite what that might mean otherwise, but at least this seems to be on the table, as they say, unless the Chinese actually bring the North Koreans to heel. What you've just described suggests that far from any interest in bringing them to heel, the Chinese have, at least to this point, seen no downside to increasing, intensifying their problematic behavior. Do you see a change in the offing now?
Well, there's certainly a change in Washington. Trump's interview with the Financial Times, which was released Sunday, made it very clear that we are no longer giving a veto on our North Korea policy to Beijing. And that's an important thing. You know, in the Bush and Obama administrations, we did that. And clearly North Korea was able to take advantage of that situation. So right now, I think that Trump is going to use some pretty harsh financial penalties against the Chinese and the North Koreans. This is a very good thing because although there's going to be turbulence ahead in our relations with both Pyongyang and with Beijing, it's necessary because we have driven ourselves into a very dark place with some very misguided policies relentlessly pursued over the course of two decades.
Well, it will be fascinating to watch whether Trump is Trump, whether these kinds of common sense views and the application of them in practice takes place at this upcoming Mar-a-Lago summit. You will be following it closely for all of us, Gordon, and we look forward to talking with you next week to get your post-mortem on what actually has transpired and what it might mean for the rest of us. Thanks for the great work you do at The Daily Beast, Forbes, and elsewhere, and come back to us next week. Next up, we'll speak with Michael Rowan, one of our duty experts on Venezuela, about some more high drama in the recent days down in Caracas after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.